Good morning. Welcome. It's very nice to have you here. It is Monday, the 11th of April, and we welcome you to our program this morning. We have the whole gang here, and we couldn't be more thrilled. We're going to talk a lot about politics because it's a very political day here in Albany, but we'll talk about other things as well. We welcome your comments. roundtable@wamc.org, or your questions or your letters. We welcome all of that. roundtable@wamc.org. All right. Let me introduce the panel to you. Alan is back. It is wonderful to have you back. Did you have a good time?
We did, Joe. As you know, Roselle's writing a book about Elvis, a different kind of book about Elvis.
Yes.
And so we spent a lot of time in Memphis, and we saw two things that were fantastic. One was Graceland, of course, and the other, which is...
I'm going to Graceland.
Not only that, but I'm told, second most visited site in the United States after the White House. Isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah.
Okay. And then number two, we saw the famous ducks at the Peabody Hotel. And there's a duck master, and the ducks are trained to come in, take the elevator down.
There's a duck master?
Duck master, yeah. And he's all dressed up like a general, and he gives a very stentorian speech. And in come the five ducks and swim around till 5 o'clock. They bus kids in from all over the country to watch the ducks. It's unbelievable. You should go to YouTube and watch the ducks. Yeah, phenomenal.
That's awesome. All right. Great.
That's what I mentioned.
So we'll head to the ducks.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
That's very
glad
good.
To be here.
Speaking of centurions and ducks coming into, we have a lot of candidates coming into into our city, our fair city, and the capital region, and we're going to talk a little bit about that as we were talking about it just before we went on the air. Rosemary Armeo is here. She is an investigative journalist. She is a journalism professor at the University at Albany and our roundtable regular, and we welcome you. Thank you.
And a prize winner on many occasions. We love her, and she has distinguished herself again and again.
Thank you. I think you're talking about the IRE Award, Investigative Reporters and Editors gave award. Not
right.
To me. I was just one of several editors listed on it, but a team has been
that's very
advocating.
Sweet, but they call the credit.
Yeah. Call that credit. Thank you. Well, we got credit for continuing the work of an Azerbaijani reporter, a friend of ours who's been jailed since last December, because she rightly pointed out corruption by the first family of that country.
Wow.
So we kept pushing her work out.
Well, it's congratulations been very great. To you and the whole team.
Yep, thank
That's
you.
Great.
Thank you.
Mike Spain is with us, and I am always thrilled when Mike is here, but I'm especially thrilled because of all of the news that's happening in our region, and of course the Times Union has its finger right on the pulsing vein. So
all the politics in the country are in Albany today.
That's right. So we thank you very much, Mike.
Oh, thank you.
As always, roundtable@wamc.org. So Mike, why don't we begin with you with a little
a little
wrap up? Yes, as to what we've got going on today. It's very from the hours of 2 to 7.
Yeah, history is being made.
It's a very,
made in
very busy
region.
Place.
That's right. We're going to have three of the five presidential candidates, and the other two were here in the past week, pretty much. Just about the past week. It'll be the first time in history when so many presidential candidates have visited here in such a short time. Of course, the first event will be Ohio Governor John Kasich, the Republican candidate, who will be in a private meeting at the Fort Orange Club in Albany. And after that, he's going to Troy, to actually North Greenbush, to LaSalle Institute, a Catholic military academy, where he'll speak to have an open event. And then he's going up to Saratoga Springs later in the afternoon to the Saratoga Civic Center, City Center. And so that'll be his penetration around. I think in Saratoga, Sean Hannity's going to be up there interviewing him, as I understand it. I may have that mixed up, but I think that's where it's going to happen.
I mean, how prestigious can you get?
That's exactly right. And then Bernie Sanders is coming to the Washington Avenue Armory at 2 o'clock. And he'll be speaking to he'll have a rally and
the home of normally it's just like roller derbies and wrestling matches. So
that's
this
right.
is pretty
mosh
cool.
Pits.
Yeah,
yeah,
mosh pits. That's yeah, so this
I
is
think
cool.
This is consistent with that that usage.
So this is great. Good.
And then tonight at 7 p.m., Donald Trump will be at the Times Union Center on North Pearl Street. Usually it's basketball games and hockey games, so and concerts. So he's anticipated to have perhaps as many as 10,000 or more people there. And the reason, of course, is that New York matters. This is the first time in an awful long time that the primary has really mattered for New Yorkers, and you're seeing ads on TV. Both Democrats and Republicans are reaching out for votes. Bernie Sanders has quite a challenge coming up against the favorite daughter of New York, former U.S. Senator Hillary Clinton, who is ahead in the polls, but he's doing pretty well trying to catch up to her. He's maybe 15, 16 points behind her, and he's got a lot of momentum going, but she has a lot of favors that are owed her by New York politicians, both downstate and upstate, so that's her challenge. And then Donald Trump is a New Yorker, and it's a challenge for Ted Cruz, who is only polling in the teens, and John Kasich, who is probably in the 20s, in the mid-20s, while Trump is well into the 50s. So everyone's trying to make a statement, looking for those important delegates as they march on to the conventions this summer.
Is it, I don't want to put you on the spot here because I'm curious, but 1988 was the last time I think the Democrats were all converging on Albany because New York mattered then, but the primary was a little bit earlier. That was the year Jesse Jackson was running and there was a lot going on there. But the last time both parties were courting New York, and that goes back decades. And then go.
Well, you can jump in here, political scientist Dr. Alan Chartok,
sure.
But I think in 1976, there was actually an interesting twist. Casey Seiler, our state editor, had a column Sunday that was fascinating about how Rockefeller, behind the scenes, steered the nomination away from by throwing New York delegates, even though he was upset with the Ford people because they pushed him out and wouldn't let him run for vice president in 1976. He was the sitting vice president, having been appointed there after Ford became president. And he stepped in, though, to keep the New York delegates from backing Ronald Reagan and helped Ford get the nomination. He went on to lose the election to Jimmy Carter. And then back in 1960, John F. Kennedy and Richard Nixon were here campaigning big time. Looking for New York support. So New York has had on and off importance, but it's been a while since we've had a real horse race, and I think we have it now.
Yeah. Well, so what does this mean? So New York matters. All the candidates are coming here. The news cycle will be out of the Capital District for at least 24 hours or so.
All eyes will be on Albany. Yeah.
That's right, especially late this afternoon. And we say all of this as the polls show Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton with very large leads in the Empire State.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I don't know which polls you're looking at.
I will bring it up.
Yeah,
hold on.
Which is interesting because the last thing I was seeing, perhaps because I was so far away in a different country at Graceland, was that it was down to 10 points and heading south for Hillary. Now, I'm fascinated by all of this because, in the beginning, everybody was yelling, superdelegates, 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 and I was sort of dismissing it. Those superdelegates are now counting a great deal. So the question is, what if Bernie took New York? What if Bernie took New York? Would it be the shot heard around the world? The answer is yes.
Let me just say very quickly that the latest poll, and I'm just trying to find out who it's from. I'll find that out in a second. Anyway, the numbers are 54% for Donald Trump, distant second for John Kasich at 22%, Ted Cruz 15%, 6% saying that they're undecided.
That'll teach Cruz to keep his mouth shut about New Yorkers.
Yeah. And then on the 16-point lead for Hillary Clinton against Bernie Sanders in New York, as of this poll release this morning.
Yeah, I liked how Mike described it as a small lead, 16 points.
Well, I mean, I think it's all over the place. I remember the Obama thing pretty well, came out of nowhere. you know, did his thing with Hillary. I'm getting a lot of mail on both sides accusing me of being perfidious. You know, basically saying you're not strong enough for Bernie, or you know, you're not for Bernie, really for Bernie. You're really for Hillary, even though you say you voted for Bernie. You know, I mean, people are really getting angry now.
You're right. If Bernie wins New York, it would be huge. But Hillary learned the lessons with her contest with Obama. I don't think she's going to lose New York. I think even if you don't count the superdelegates, which I don't think Bernie can get, she still is 200 delegates ahead and 2.5 million votes. She points that out often enough. We should know it. And Bernie doesn't have a chance with the superdelegates. He has not campaigned for the Democratic Party. He has not done any favors for any of those delegates. Politics is about you give me this and I'll give you that. He has nothing to trade.
Okay, so let me ask you a question, Rosemary, and you know how I adore you. But,
get ready.
Yes, I do know how you adore me.
This is how he adores her. Yeah.
But let's assume, just for the hell of it now, that Bernie takes the popular vote in New York, and that Hillary goes to the convention and uses every trick in the book.
They're not tricks, Alan. They're the rules of the
game.
Yeah.
Can I just finish the sentence and then you go?
If you can refrain from pejorative terms, yes, you may finish.
Well, it's just about impossible. Go ahead.
Okay. Bernie gets the popular vote. Hillary pulls the superdelegates because the entire establishment in New York, as far as I can tell, almost entirely is for Hillary.
Well, in the country, I would say, not just New
That's
York.
Right.
That's right.
A lot of people signed on in the very beginning thinking she was invincible, and they signed on, and she did that. Boy, there would be an awful lot of people who would be very angry if she did it by taking the superdelegates.
Well, she has 469 superdelegates committed to her so far, and he's got 31 committed to him. And I think you said
where the,
exactly
where the
right.
31 come from?
Yeah, I know. I wonder where they came from. Right.
I mean, the whole idea of the superdelegates is to prevent a Bernie Sanders from winning the nomination.
It's to prevent another George McGovern, really.
Yeah. The party's best interest is to have the strongest candidate.
And well, now you're going to get 1,000 letters.
I know, 1,000 letters saying, look at all the polls that say Bernie would win. However, that is not the view of the Democratic establishment.
It's Democratic to give the Party Democratic establishment veto power over the rank and file.
Which is very interesting because, Mike and Rosemary, as you both know, this incredible popularity of Donald Trump and of Bernie is exactly because they are not
the establishment.
Okay,
that
so who? And I don't want to. I don't want to swerve off into this topic of the on the Democratic side. But I am curious to the Republican side as far as what's being done with the delegates and what Cruz was able to do over the weekend. Can anyone explain that to me fully?
Absolutely.
It's really interesting. And Colorado
in too. He did.
Colorado, right?
And Colorado. Wow, that was a big one. He took he took every delegate in Wyoming, Colorado.
Yeah.
And he did this because Cruz, like Hillary, said, I want this. How do I do it? And he figured it out.
That's
and
right.
The way to win in many of these states is you have to campaign throughout the whole state. You have to have an established ground game in every section of the state. Cruz has put in that time. He didn't just start like Donald Trump did, you know, literally a few months ago in that state. It doesn't matter the popular vote there. It's done not by voting but by caucuses, which means you have to bring people in small groups together around the state of Wyoming. And Cruz has done that. He has wooed the entire population and the entire geography of that state, and he got every single delegate. It was a huge, huge haul.
Joe, just we got one note here, which is a just interesting. Bernie at the Armory will be at the Armory at 2. Bernie will be at the Armory at 2? The Facebook page for the event I have says 11 a.m.
So I just the doors open, I think. The
doors open at 11, and then because he's in Binghamton first, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Why?
And then so the event is at the actual program, I believe is how they put it. The program starts at 2, and I think last access to the building is 1:30. But if you go on the Bernie site, it does have the rundown of the full schedule. But we're correct in what we're reporting.
Well, one indicator that Bernie is kind of acknowledging he doesn't have a chance to win in New York, is that he's taking off for Rome for a couple days to speak at the Vatican, which is
We mentioned that on Friday, yes. Where it was originally reported the Pope had invited him, and it's one of those deals with a Pope invitation. It doesn't come from the Pope.
Right,
it comes from the establishment, and he actually had applied to go. It's still a big deal. I'm not
putting it
down.
Yeah.
It's also smart.
Yeah, it is smart. It is smart. I agree.
All right. We have about a minute, so if you want to read a letter or two, and then we'll go to a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll keep going.
Okay. Dan says, my vote counts, really? When I hear all of the different ways delegates are manipulated, no thanks. Scam, says Dan. Jeff says something, but it's not loading. So I'll just have to see that, Rosemary. It's just not.
Well, remember, this is not law that we're talking about. This is party rules, and they can do what they want. You know.
Yeah.
Well,
and
that doesn't mean that the party rules aren't loaded, right? I mean, in other words,
it doesn't mean that
there will be
fair.
People out there.
No, you're absolutely right, but there's still the rules that the parties are abiding by.
They can be discussed and changed at each of the conventions as well.
That's right, Rosemary. And may I just point out, these rules came because the old rules weren't any good.
Exactly. Right.
So
well,
point.
Yeah.
Or that they weren't considered good enough to win with.
Right. They didn't work at that time, so now we'll get new ones to work
for
the current situation.
Okay, for whatever it's worth. Does it matter that the population of the Capital District is larger than that of all Wyoming, and that's from Rick?
That matters to us.
Well, there's a whole lot more delegates at stake in New York State than there is in Wyoming.
Okay. So done?
Let's just pause there.
Sure.
And then when we come back, we'll get to more letters and we'll continue our conversation. There's a lot more to talk about, so we'll do that. Alan Chartok is here. Rosemary Armeo, and I'm sorry, because I just
forgot. Are you blanking on who I am?
No, we got a thing about Rosemary, and I'm just Maury Amsterdam. And Rosemary Armeo is here. And Mike Spain, we will continue our conversation. And
I'm
your
Mel
letters.
Cooley, actually.
Here's the short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We are talking about candidates in the Capital District of New York State, but also about the election as a whole. We have your letters. We want your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org, and we'll get back to those in just a moment.
Yeah, we love your letters.
We love your letters. Alan Chartok is here, Rosemary Armeo, and Mike Spain. Mike, how much of the city is shut down today?
Well, quite a bit. Parking along Washington Avenue near the Armory and the side streets is prohibited. And then, of course, North Pearl Street outside the Times Union Center you can't park there now. And
this started at like 6 this morning, right?
Yeah. They don't want people like coming in early and just kind of getting in there. They want to be able to control the crowds coming in, and they don't really know how many people are coming yet. Have you heard any numbers? I mean, the estimate I've heard is 10,000 or more.
Gosh.
The Times Union Center can hold up to 17,000 for a concert if you put seating out on the floor. I don't know.
As to parking on North Pearl Street, I think it actually started about 15 years ago.
Yeah.
I've never gotten a parking spot.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Fortunately, it's not supposed to have any impact on state employees, you know, exiting at 5 o'clock, because the traffic shouldn't really build until right before the event.
Although the Bernie Sanders event will just be getting out at that time up.
That's true.
This is what we call heavy FLW's famous last words. Shouldn't have any trouble getting out.
Yeah, and you know, the world, you know, the nation's top media people will probably be here, you know, covering it. You know, it'll be easy for them. And, well, you know, sometimes at these events, the public is more enamored with, there I just saw, you know,
Rachel
Maddow.
Matthews.
Wow, you know,
Wait, Rachel's going to be here?
Right.
All right. I've changed my mind about
fighting
the traffic.
Fighting which one to go to. All right, so let's go to some more letters, and then we'll move on to the other subject.
I can't believe how many letters we're getting.
We love that.
Okay.
We love your letters.
We love your letters, mostly. Dear panel, Rosemary has said the exact same thing that Cokie Roberts said earlier. Superdelegates are there to make sure a populist doesn't secure the nomination.
Wait.
Well, it shows you how smart Cokie is if she's emulating what
Neither
said.
Of us said a populist.
No,
said
you didn't.
Bill Clinton got the nomination. He was a populist. The rules are set up to make sure that someone outside of the party who is considered not able to win it doesn't get in.
And Ed says, when you talk about Wyoming, 280 people voted in the Democratic caucus. Bernie, 156. Hillary, 124. The Big Mo, 20 times more. Delegates are at stake in New York. Think there will be 20 times more participants. Well, remember, there are differences between caucuses and primaries, aren't there, guys?
Big ones.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Very much.
Hillary has done terrible in the caucuses. They've overwhelmingly have gone to Bernie Sanders.
I'm not a big fan of caucuses, to be honest with you. I think they're much more easily
manipulatable. Sure.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think I would go to them. The participation levels are very, very low, and I don't think I would. You spend all day, it's like playing games. You know, you move around parts to a room, and I would not do it,
But as you pointed out, it's Cruz who's been able to get his people on the ground get out there and take advantage of that opportunity.
Oh, yeah.
And that makes
they were interviewing today on NPR some of the participants in Colorado, and they all knew Cruz and knew his policies and had talked to him. They loved him.
Yeah.
We're getting a ton of letters on this not qualified business. Many people are pointing out that it was not it was Hillary who first said that Bernie was unqualified. Bernie responded by saying, you hit me first. You're not qualified.
Well, she did it rhetorically, didn't she? Questioned his qualifications.
That's the way they always do
it. It's not quite saying you're not qualified.
Yeah. Cruz reminds people of sad Elvis, in quotes. Trump is Rodney Dangerfield. Don't get any respect. Then shoulder, shrug, and hand gestures. I never quite understand what Bill was talking about. But I love his letters. Okay. Hello, everyone. In terms of obtaining accurate polling data, is it important that most young voters do not have a landline? Well, I think, frankly, that has been somewhat corrected. I think the pollsters now have ways of doing that.
They do.
Some of it is random. Some of it is that they've been building up people's young people's cell numbers over the years, one way or another. Okay, and Kathy says, I had the impression Alan was going to be on vacation this week. So nice to hear your voice. Thank you, Kathy. And Justin says, and by the way, folks, I think we should mention that somebody's climbing our tower today for another broadcaster, and so there will be you'll be less able to hear us for the rest of the day than I think you are now. Got it? Yes, Joe?
Yeah, sounds
okay.
Good.
Wait, someone's climbing our tower for another broadcast?
Well, we don't own the tower. We basically are given space Channel 10's tower up there. And we have lifelong, as long as the water flows and the way they got their permit and the grass is green, we get to stay up there. But when, let's say, WNYT, which is the case today, has to make a modification in their signal, they climb the tower. And at that point, and sometimes we have to climb the tower and lower the power, because if we don't lower the power, then somebody's never going to have children again. So,
so light up.
There is that. Eric says, forget the candidates. No matter who gets elected, gridlock will continue, and that is an actual threat to our democracy. And Nancy says, you keep accentuating superdelegates. Hillary leads with pledged delegates and the popular votes by millions.
That's true, and she tells you that a lot.
Right, but it's the delegates that matter, not the popular
votes. Not the
votes,
right.
All right. Okay. Since your broadcast radius extends well beyond the Capital District, I would say so. It should be noted that Bernie is holding a rally at Marist College in Poughkeepsie tomorrow. Feel the burn from Justin.
Yeah, we've been reporting that as well.
Yeah. Dear panel, if Trump goes to the convention with 1,237 delegates, do they legally have to give him nomination on the first ballot, or can they reject it and go to the second ballot? Well, Nancy makes a profound point here, which is that in New York State, like in other, as in other states, there is this propensity for the bureaucracy, the Democratic bureaucracy, to pick the delegates, so that even though, and then to assign them. So you may assign somebody as a Bernie delegate, but if they're really, if you sign the paycheck, they might really end up collaborating to do something that would destroy the Bernie candidacy.
They could take it away from him, but if he goes in with 1237, it would
Trump.
Be real
yeah.
Trump. It yeah. would be oh, yeah. really hard to
oh,
deny
him.
And in fact, I thought that was going to be the case until his stumbles in the past couple of weeks. I thought he was going to nail, and he still may nail those that many delegates and go in. He would be very powerful then.
He has 743 right now, and there's still 854 out there.
So he's
got to get
can.
Pretty much most
yeah.
of them.
Yeah.
So it does look like he may go into the convention without the 1237.
And even at 1236, he's going to have a fight on his hands.
Right. But if it's 1237, can someone answer this? What if the yes. Republican National Committee were to meet ahead of time? And decide by majority vote that we're going to make it 1250.
I've been saying that all along.
Can they do that?
I've been saying, of course they can.
Can they move the goalposts?
Of course they can. They can stand up. The head of the convention, who I think is Ryan, stands up, says, "Do I hear a motion?" Somebody else out, change it to 15,000 or whatever. And by acclamation, all those in favor say aye. Hearing no nays, you know, it's done. It all depends how much they want to take it away from them. By the way, I should point out, shouldn't I, Joe, that one to a customer, one letter
yeah,
to a customer.
Yeah, we've got a lot of multiples today.
Yeah. Hello, panel. Welcome back, Alan. Will you share your opinions on whether Bill is helping or hurting Hillary? Also for Alan, how is Murray the dog? That's from Kathleen. The answer is Bill is helping Hillary. Bill retires from the presidency as the most popular president in the history at the time of the presidency. So he's helping her. And the other day there was this kerfuffle.
Yes.
You talked about that, did you not?
We did.
Yes, we did.
Yeah, there was this kerfuffle.
Black Lives Matter.
And he was sorry afterwards for that.
Bill needs to shut up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think this way you have it both ways. You have Bill saying something that is popular with a segment of the society, and you have Hillary saying, Bill, you shouldn't have said that. So now you can have it sort of both ways.
Hillary gets hit on everything he sure. does or doesn't do. He had an affair. It's her fault.
Yeah.
He passed a crime bill. It's her fault. He defended the crime bill. It's her fault. Everything he does reflects on her in a negative way.
Daniel says, if I'm a superdelegate, I'm going to support someone who I know who is working with me, who is supporting me, who is helping me. That is not Bernie. As long as Hillary wins the national popular vote, I will have all the cover I need.
I want to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to go to Maureen's letter because I think it's an interesting one. Get us off on another slightly
topic.
Other topic.
There she is.
Not really, but close. More journalistic. Let's take a break. We'll be back with our roundtable panel after this short break.
Support for WAMC comes from the Unitarian Universalist Congregations of the Capital District, presenting Radical Hope, a worship service addressing challenges of finding hope in the face of climate change. This Sunday at 10:30 a.m. at the Doan Stewart School, capitalregionuu.org. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany, Dr. Tom Denham providing career guidance, testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing. Careers in Transition, LLC.com. And Tom McCray, Edward Jones Financial Advisor on University Drive, Amherst, Massachusetts, member SIPC, Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, edwardjones.com/TomMcCray.
Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. As I said, I want to start with Maureen's letter, which Alan will read to you now.
Yes, I will. It says, Boston Globe Trump editorial. Dear folks, what do you think about the Boston Globe Sunday editorial about Trump? I was kind of stunned by its vehemence. Maureen.
They tweeted this out on Saturday to get everybody kind of looking at it or looking forward to it and seeing what it was. And then they basically put out an edition, a page of what the world could be like in a year when Donald Trump wins and is president. it struck me as very odd and not quite up to the journalistic standards you would expect from a major newspaper in the United States, but I go to Rosemary.
No, I agree. Donald Trump called the paper stupid and worthless. I agree with him for once. I don't even let my students make up a name in a story or an alias, and they make up a front page. How many times on April 1st do faculty advisors have to apologize for stupid April Fool's Day pages done by student newspapers, and now we have a major American newspaper do it. And I also pointed out this is the second time in this election the Boston Globe has done something weird. The other time was at the very beginning when they had a front page editorial beseeching Elizabeth Warren to enter the race because they really liked her as a candidate.
Well, I think the biggest problem here is that they weren't clearly identifying it as an editorial. I think it's perfectly appropriate to take license on the editorial page to exaggerate something, to say, this is what we see the Trump, you know, this is how we envision a Trump presidency. But because it wasn't like a big label, editorial across the top. It just had deportations to begin as the main headline.
Right.
I think it could be confusing to people, and there shouldn't be any confusion at all. It should be understood that this is
fiction,
a editorial, and it wasn't.
Yeah, and also, right, it is fiction, and it's forecasting, and I don't know. I felt like anybody It seemed to cheapen the product.
Yep.
I think when the Boston Globe sort of had a good year with Spotlight and everything, looking at, you
really
know, different things of a newspaper, that this kind of throws it away. Alan.
I'd like to take the con on this.
Okay, take the con.
Ladies and gentlemen, wake up and smell the roses. This is a different time. Rosemary, you're teaching that journalism to those kids, you know, from the 1970s, 1980s, when there was a responsibility. These newspapers are all closing. They're folding. They've got to do whatever they can. And I know what you're going to say, that, you know, that's irresponsible of me. But no, I think people in Boston are smart enough to know what it was all about. The whole country did. I think they made their point. I think they made it well about what it would happen in a Trump presidency.
That's a legitimate comment, but you were saying this is an act of desperation to get attention. And here we are talking about it in Albany, New York.
Exactly. Exactly my point. Look, you have to come up with different ideas about how to sell the fish.
Well, I agree on that, but going to fiction, it's not worth saving.
It's not
the
fiction.
Paper go down. It is fiction. The
it
whole thing
fiction.
Was made
Why
up.
Why is it fiction? They say
everything about it was made up.
Oh, I beg to differ.
No, it's speculative fiction.
The date
is exactly
that they
what
list
it is.
On the front
I beg
pages
to differ.
How do you
a year
differ?
From
how do you differ? How is that journalist?
I beg to differ. Please.
You need another vacation.
Please,
back
I gotta
to
watch
Graceland.
Them. I gotta watch them ducks. So here's what they.
Quack.
No. They know what they're doing. They made the point that on day one, Trump would have to start keeping his pledges, deport everybody. That's what he said he was going to do. Makes sense. That's what he's going to do.
But in reading the story, It is speculative fiction. It is telling you, it's putting a lot. First of all, it was a year in the future, correct?
Right.
Am I
right
on that?
April 9th, 2017.
Right.
The date.
So good luck getting that done in the first 3 months of your term. But anyway, so there was a lot of speculation.
Well, the pomposity in this room is overwhelming.
So is the idiocy. Wow.
I kind of fall in
now
the middle here
out.
Because I think it was inappropriate to portray it as a legitimate news story on the front page. However, to speculate on an opinion page about what a Trump presidency
would be
like.
Yeah, but it wasn't on the opinion page.
It
exactly.
Yeah.
That's my point.
Well, they made it into an opinion page.
Well, they did, but not with any label. I think it was ambiguous. And the fact that some people may mistaken it for an actual news story, it was a grotesque error on their part. They lost their credibility, I think.
Well, first of all, I don't agree. But second of all, even the greatest newspaper in the United States, the New York Times, it is the greatest newspaper in the United States, I think. You know, the slant on some of the anti-Trump stories has gotten to be pretty pronounced in terms of how they pick their ideas, how they pick their stories, where they place them. Come on.
But that's different than making things
Everything's
up.
Different, Joe. Everything's different in the world. Don't you see?
No.
Oh, okay.
It's something we expect from The Onion, but not the Boston Globe.
Right. I don't know.
I like it.
I don't feel good about it. I don't feel good about it.
Three
I don't like
one.
It. It's, I don't
one.
Know.
Yeah,
all right.
3-1, you're wrong.
and you know, the other thing, too, is that what if it was You know, then do you do it for all the candidates? Do you speculate in a
the
year of what it's going to be
a cruise?
Well, we haven't seen Tomorrow's Globe, Joe.
Right? Or Kasich, or Bernie, or Hillary?
Not at all. You only do it to the ones you hate.
Well, they will argue that the big red and white, in the white letters on the red square, live now, president to address the nation next to a picture of Trump, that any reasonable person would know that this was fiction.
Thank you,
therefore,
Mike.
Speculation.
You're a bright man.
But I think
they
traded away their credibility.
Yeah. The fiction, whether you recognize it or not, does not belong in a newspaper on the front page or any place else.
You don't think it's free to speculate on what it might be like? Here, you know, if it has an intro that says, here are the date, April 9th, 2017, here's what it would be like or could be like, in our opinion, under a Trump presidency. That's completely legitimate.
That's speculation.
That's editorializing. That's opinion.
That is fine, but that's not what this is. This
well,
is
you said
the
it doesn't have any place
page.
In the newspaper. I'm sorry.
Fiction.
It does, on the editorial
fiction
page.
Fiction has
well,
no
to
place.
Which
fiction
Rick
is different
whoa.
Than a speculation.
Well, I
whoa.
Think that's
whoa.
What this is.
To which Rick writes, panel, the Boston Globe's editorial spoofing Trump was not on the front page. It was on the editorial in the editorial section of the Sunday paper as the front page on that section. And down at the bottom on the left was a disclaimer, and that's from Rick in Massachusetts. And if he's in Massachusetts, he should know.
Well, there's also it was also done on line number one. And also, from my understanding, in a lot of places, it was put on the that section was put on the front of the paper.
Right.
So that was
the okay.
well.
The
good
best
old
part
anyway.
Of it was the little tiny headline down below on a short that says "Trump on Nobel Prize shortlist."
and Jerry, our good friend from Gilderland, always coming up with well, sometimes coming up with a good idea. Hi, the Globe based its editorial on Trump's promises. It was obviously an editorial.
Yeah, but it was. Okay, go ahead.
Well, do you want more?
No. Let's talk about President Obama insisting Sunday that there will be no White House or political influence on the FBI or the Justice Department as they look into the security of the private email system Hillary Clinton used for government work when she was Secretary of State. I can guarantee that, Obama said in an interview with Fox News Sunday. It was his first interview with the network in 2 years.
That's a very important story.
I love that Edward Snowden commented on Obama's speech, in which he also said in the same speech that there's classified information. Interview.
Yeah.
There's classified information, then there's classified information. Hillary didn't do anything wrong. To which Snowden tweeted, God, wish I had known that. I think of course, I don't think Hillary did stuff wrong, but I think this was a really...
But doesn't this
crazy.
Demonstrate his who he is supporting?
Yeah, of course it does.
Yeah.
This is this is politics. This isn't presidential.
It also demonstrates that the followers of Hillary will basically. And she made a bad choice, a series
she
of
said
bad
that
choices
herself.
Here. Yeah. Well, okay, but we vote for candidates because their fingers are next to the button and all the rest of it, and so bad choices count.
Right. So, like voting for gun control, for example. Every candidate out there has made bad choices. You can't spend decades in politics and not make some wrong decisions.
Right. And it's perfectly okay. I like someone who learns from, who evolves. I like people who can look at the facts and make a new assessment and change their position.
Now, if you find a perfect candidate, great. Bring them on. We could use it.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else to be
Yeah, sure. Joel says, as long as you have editorial boards and newspapers are endorsing candidates, anything goes. It's obvious fiction when the date on the paper was 2017. The people are not that ignorant. Great show as always, says Joel. I love it when they say great show as always, because I think they think, the writers, that if they say great show as always, even though they disagreed in the paragraph above, that you'll read it.
There's
I think
certain
point
all, to
that. He's not all wrong.
He's
right.
not all wrong. Yeah. Right. I think you just read it.
If they said, I hate every minute of your show, I only watch it to criticize it, and there are people like that. We hear from them, too. We discount it. We don't answer it. We don't read their
letters. I agree with that part of the letter, that when they say that the audience is, you know, that the readers are smart enough to understand it.
Yeah.
I think that goes exactly to what you said. So when they put in the subject heading of the email, you're absolutely right, Alan. Well, then, you know.
Yeah, you're going to call it up.
Okay. Now, James says, how does the president get away with commenting on an FBI investigation still underway? Oh, mistrial for Hillary, and that's from Dr. Jim. The answer to that one, it seems to me, is he is responding not to the substance of the case,
right.
but to simply say, everybody's out there saying, I'll never let that happen, and that's wrong.
Let me just quickly end with this story. And by the way, we have four people in this room. Do we want to say how is it Hiroshima or Hiroshima?
I've heard it both ways.
Right. So I don't want to.
Now we're
going to
get all those letters saying it's our responsibility.
That's what I'm trying to avoid. But anyway, Secretary of State John Kerry will focus on the vision of a nuclear-free future while he is in Hiroshima, and will not apologize for the atomic bomb that the United States dropped at the end of World War II, killing 140,000 people, according to a U.S. official. What do you make of that? Should he?
He should not apologize. I'm glad he's there, and I hope Obama goes also.
That's right. There's speculation. This was a prelude to the president visiting Hiroshima.
At the next
what are you looking at me
conference.
For?
I thought you would want to weigh in real quick.
No, I think this is one of the most difficult decisions that has ever been made in the United States. The idea of 140,000 people. On the other hand, you may have saved a million. That's always the argument.
Well, the more troubling one is Nagasaki. Yes. Why did we have to drop the second bomb?
Yeah, that's the more troubling.
It ended the war in days.
Hiroshima.
But the history of the place, the history, if you watch the historical antecedents, the way that we look at it, it shows that there was still a military cabal that didn't want to give it up even before, after the first bomb was dropped.
We are out of time. Thanks to everybody for contributing and for being a part. This same group will be here tomorrow, and we'll kind of talk over what happened over the last 24 hours here in the Capital Region. Thank you very much for being with us. We'll continue with the roundtable after this short break.